Hello, and welcome to Relatable 2.0. I'm your host, Teresa Freeman. Thinking about making the leap from the federal world to the private sector? Then you'll want to listen to this great conversation. This week, I sit down with James Weston, a security and risk leader who spent most of his career in the federal space before boldly stepping out into a commercial role. He shares what pushed him to make the move, how he prepared for it, and what he's learned along the way. Plus, his simple advice for anyone starting out. Just get there, get in the door, and prove yourself. It's a perfect episode for anyone looking to pivot in their career. Let's dive in and enjoy this episode. First, let me just welcome you to the podcast, James. Is this your first interview, your first podcast interview? Or have you
a couple? I think it might be my first podcast.
All right. Excited. Well, welcome. The water is warm, so it's going to be just fine. But, you know, you and I got to work together a little bit during your transition from federal to commercial. And I think that it's really important to get stories out there, particularly now. People are trying to make that move. You know, we've got a lot of people that have been impacted by the new administration, and they're, you know, even if they have a bank of time, you know, how are they using that time? Like, you know, in terms of figuring out that next step. And I think hearing from someone that's been through it, hearing about your own journey, you know, some of those challenges, I just, you know, and I want to say kudos to you kind of for reaching out and recommending we have the conversation, because I think there's like, there's a lot of people that could benefit from your story. And I think what's interesting also, just on the topic of federal to commercial, I've worked with quite a few folks in the coaching space that are moving there. But I think what's interesting is that I think when you're pivoting, whether it's federal, commercial, or commercial to more commercial, or you're, you know, changing perhaps industries, or you're, you know, there's certain tenets to that move that I think translate. So while this is anchored in your experience, as we talk about going from federal to commercial, I do think that people listening that maybe even if you're not in that spot, but you might be interested in a pivot or can learn from your own experiences. So, you know, thanks so much for being here, and I'm really looking forward to us kind of digging in and talking more.
Yeah, no, excited. Let's get into it.
Let's get into it. Okay, so maybe let's start, you know, first start with just a quick intro into you and your career, you know, what kind of your path before you kind of made your pivot. Maybe we can talk a bit about that first.
Sure. So I spent the majority of my career thus far at the U.S. State Department, specifically the Bureau of Diplomatic Security. I actually started there before 9/11, which was a pivotal time. Obviously, it had a huge impact on the security community. Before that, I was at the Department of Justice for a few years, but really spent, you know, big bulk of time at the State Department working on security, and had a number of different roles, always in security, but I was able to touch different things that we did, like policy, logistics, administrative, some HR. And then I spent the last really kind of 12 years that I was there primarily helping the private sector be safe overseas, which was a great opportunity and definitely impacted my career field, because I ultimately joined McDonald's Corporation, where I am now, in May of 2024. And that experience that I had working with the private sector really helped me not only understand what it was like, what challenges that the private sector had and how it was different from my field in the State Department, but really it set me up to do well, I think, when I was ultimately able to transition over to the private sector. I had a lot of insight into what they did, what their challenges were, how they spoke, what they needed to prioritize, and what they needed to do, because of the work I had been doing for 10 years. So I was a little bit lucky in that regard, I would say. But still, I enjoyed my time at the State Department, and really felt that it, what I learned and how I was shaped, my career was shaped there, set me up to continue to do well in the private sector.
Would you say that was intentional, or did that happen to be, in terms of your move to within the government, but have that relationship with private? Was that something when you were thinking about your career long term, or was it an opportunity presented itself and it was like, oh, this is just going to work out for me, right? In terms of that.
It's very funny because it was a little bit of both. I like to tell this story. So the job that worked with the private sector was held by someone for 7 years, and she and I were actually quite good friends. We had started out roughly the same time, and I was going for another opportunity in about 2012, 2013 timeframe, and I didn't get that job. My friend who had been in this office got it. And I was kind of sitting there talking to a friend of mine, saying, "Gee, I wonder why I didn't get this job. You know, it went to someone that works in this other area I'd really like to work in." And he said, "Well, that means that job is open." And I said, "Oh, yeah, you're right." I don't know why I was just so focused on not getting the job, I didn't realize the opportunity that it opened up. So I'd been interested in that, and when the opportunity came, I went after it very hard. I networked to get it. I interviewed, and ultimately I was selected. And so it was a very intentional thing, even though I didn't initially see it. It took the help of a good friend.
Yeah. And let's talk a little just in terms of your, I should say, thank you for your service. And so, in terms of your work within the federal government and working in that space, is that something that you were, you know, some people call that like a calling, right? Where they're, you know, you're called to serve. The mission is pretty clear. You want to support your country. You've got this added benefit of security and keeping people safe and, you know, having that be part of your interest. So, was that something really important to you, intentional, like in terms of that being a big part of your career and moving into that space?
Definitely. I grew up in that space. So I'm from the Washington, D.C. area, and my father had been in the U.S. Air Force. My mother worked for the Central Intelligence Agency. So really came from that public service background. I grew up with all of their friends also working in that world. So it's kind of what I knew. And when I graduated from college, I got a job immediately as a contractor working for the Justice Department. And it just resonated with me, you know, serving your country, making a difference. And that was an interesting time because there was a lot going on, and it was the kind of dot-com boom. But there I was positioned working in security. And ultimately, when I said after 9/11, a lot of emphasis came over to that, I kind of was in the right place, even though it didn't seem like that for the first couple of years when security really got big and it started to become a lot more prevalent in what the State Department was doing. I was positioned well to advance during that time.
Interesting. And then before we start talking about the transition specifically, I know I work with a lot of entry-level talent and people that are really interested in pursuing a life, you know, either at the CIA or in security or working for defense or, you know, and it's, you know, it's competitive now. Like I think it's even more competitive now than back. It's funny, I grew up in McLean. So all the families that all the kids, you know, their parents work for the State Department. There's a lot of like, and then of course, as everyone's retiring, you're like, oh, there's one, there's one, there's one. You know, they're all over. But I don't know. You know what? You may have like through the podcast, I've and through a lot of my relationships. You know, I have a lot of friends that and colleagues that I've met. So I've had some people comment on, you know, their advice. But from your perspective, what do you think helped you? I like when you talked about maybe starting out as a contractor, but for people that are maybe running into obstacles or it is a path that they really want to take, do you have any counselor advice for them in terms of pursuing a career?
I definitely think if you have the opportunity to get the proverbial like foot in the door, take that. And because that really was what I did, and I saw many people do it. And I would tell people that any opportunity, I was like, look, just get there. You know, you might if you're studying West African security and you want to be a specialist in like Boko Haram and you want to do counterterrorism, you might have to start out doing logistics first. Get there, get inside the club, if you will, prove yourself, prove that you know what you're doing, and then opportunities will open up from that. So my first job was not glamorous at all. I was really an assistant to the chief of staff. I used at the Immigration and Naturalization Service. I had to do things like his calendar, walk papers around the building. But I never missed an opportunity to meet someone while I was doing that. Get to know what was important to my boss, what were the things that he was working on that I could be able to, okay, this is a priority for him and it's got to be a priority for me. So I think if you can get into the door, even if it's not what you ultimately want to do, but get there, prove yourself, then you'll be positioned when your opportunity presents itself.
Yes, and I think too, there's like a persistence, right, and a resilience, because I do think depending on what path you want to take, there's usually a lengthy clearance process. Like even, you know, there's a lot of folks that I know that I've talked to that had a job while they were waiting, you know, for that clearance to, I mean, it's sometimes you almost have to treat it like maybe doing two or three things at one time, right, in order to kind of have different levers. And I also think your point around being available and adding value in any way that you can, I think transcends almost any org. So just that idea of like can do, you know, I'll do whatever I need to do. And similarly, when I first started my career, it was in campus recruiting, and I was a coordinator, and it was in professional services. And I mean, it was definitely grunt work. It was like creating Excel files, and it was escorting candidates, and it was, you know, it wasn't very glamorous and sexy, you know, but that led to like a 25-year career in professional services that I think you I couldn't have possibly actually dreamt for myself, but it was really started at just kind of blocking and tackling of like where's the opportunity, who do I know, how can I show up and make the most of that, and then things follow, right? So I think, you know, that's great advice. Go ahead.
I used to volunteer for anything too. Like, even if it was, hey, we need someone to help plan the holiday party, my hand would go up. And it was, again, an opportunity to collaborate with people. I really liked doing that. I think that's something still that motivates me. But it was also just a way for people to get to know me. That would, you'd be surprised how many meetings you would end up in with senior leaders because they would get around that time and they would want to know what's going on with the holiday party. And so there you are presenting to them. And so if they were familiar with you, they could see that you're articulate, they would remember that. So I think that's another piece of advice I would give is volunteer, even if it's something that you might think is below you, there's going to be an aspect to it that's going to work in your advantage.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so let's talk a little bit about your movement toward not just commercial, but I think when you and I met, you were at a bit of a crossroads in terms of where you were in your career and thinking about these different avenues of like, do you stay? Do you pursue more senior positions within the lanes that were available to you within the government, right? Versus like, ooh, there was maybe some commercial interest, but I think it'd be interesting to kind of step back a little bit and kind of talk a bit about just being within where you were at the time with respect to like, oh, I want to, even if you wanted to stay inside but get more senior level positions and kind of what you were running into there that potentially created an opportunity.
I think the best way to kind of start out is to say that my transition to the private sector really began from a very intentional effort to advance in my federal career. And for me, that meant getting into the senior executive service. So I was a civil service employee at the State Department. And the next step for me was the senior executive service. And if anyone's familiar with that, it's very formulaic. They have five core competencies that everyone is essentially judged against. Your entire body of work, what have you been doing, and how does it align to these five core competencies? So I was fortunate that I was able to start a temporary assignment working on something totally different than what I had done, and it was really leading a new initiative. That was one of the secretary's priorities under his modernization agenda. So I was, leading essentially creating a data analytics program, working with machine learning and artificial intelligence. And this was in 2022 and 23 when, ChatGPT had just dropped and everyone was beginning to really notice AI. And here I was working on this new effort to get it into my organization. So that involved, this work, which was again different from what I had been doing, but I also was working on how do I tell my story? How can I, answer these five core competency questions in essays on my resume when I'm interviewing for opportunities? How does this, how am I doing all of this work now? So it's really focused on me and focusing on advancing. And I think that an interesting thing when I look back on it was I realized that it wasn't so much like a path to getting to the senior executive service, but it was like a springboard. So I was taking a leap. I was intentionally putting myself out there that I wanted to advance, and I was, kind of going up in the air. I was either going to land in the senior executive service, I was going to land back where I'd started, and I realized that, you know what? You could land in the private sector theoretically. So take this opportunity and really focus on yourself and position myself for any opportunity that might come up. So that was really how I started out on the transition.
You know,
And
let me ask you one question about that,
yeah.
because I think that's an important distinction of, especially for those of us that have been in a career path for a while, and you know what the end game or the carrot looks like, right? And you're sort of driving to that end game. And there's something about that end game that validates everything else, right? And I mean, so like the SES, and it's similar to, you know, potentially like in the partner world, like becoming a partner or director, right? Like if you're, you know, not revenue generating, like there are these certain like milestones in certain businesses that it's like, yeah, once you make that move and you're in that role, you kind of made it. You get to like, there's something about, you know, I think there's ego in it. And I also think there's also like, there's some, for me, it was like in my path, it was a lot of like, oh, that's going to validate all the work that I've done. And that's going to sort of tell the world that I'm effective at what I do. And so for you, I'm curious, like that role and pursuing that and saying like, what was in that for you? And was that part of it, right? To kind of have to think about it in a different context, to your point of like, you know what, it doesn't have to be here. It can be somewhere else, right? And like being able to make that mental switch, I think that it's a growth mindset versus a fixed mindset.
Yeah, I think some of it was a validation. A little bit of it, honestly, was kind of maybe fortunate naivete. So when I started out, when I was 22 years old and just working, I was in the commissioner's office of the Immigration and Naturalization Service. That was like my first job. When I looked around, everyone that was in that office was either in the senior executive service or they were like a GS-15 or right below that. That was kind of like my norm. And that became my, okay, you need to get here. And so my career ambition was, okay, I'm going to be in the senior executive service by the time I'm 36. That was like my kind of career aspiration. And so I worked towards that and I actually positioned myself to get there. The opportunity just didn't come. And then what I was doing at that time, I really enjoyed. And so I kind of said, you know what? I'm good now. I can focus on, I got there. Let me focus on what I'm doing, and then the opportunity will happen. And then I continued to just enjoy what I was doing, but then I came back to, let's open that door again. Let's work on you to be ready for the next time an opportunity presents itself. You can go after it, or you can start seeking them out. So that was really the validation was there, but it was also just that was had been my goal since day one.
Got it. And I love the another thing you said, which I think gets lost in people in translation. People don't always think of it. Like, it's great to have goals. It's great to have milestones that you're reaching for, and to also get deep on what you're doing and be curious and learn. Like, you can get so stuck on the what's going to happen next that you miss out on the present and what you're supposed to be learning and growing and developing and just doing and doing it well. So I think that you spoke to that, right? Where you were like, you know what, I was actually really enjoying what I was doing, and so I felt like this was feeding me, and so that's kind of where you reacted to in the time, and I think that's important. Okay, so let's talk about like you get to this point where you're like, okay, I think I want to do, you know, I'm going to pursue SES, but I am going to consider some commercial. Just tell us a little bit about that process for you. Like, how did you get yourself ready, and what were some of the levers that you pulled to do that? Whether you're a recent college grad entering the workforce or a seasoned executive navigating a transition, I'm here to help. I'm Coach T, and I specialize in helping you land the job, lead with impact, and love what you do. Let's get to work. Visit tfasoftskills.com to learn more. Now back to the show.
I worked a lot on my social media presence, first of all. Like I really looked at, okay, what am I doing on LinkedIn? I was already pretty intentional about like who I accepted as connections and things like that. But then I was like, well, what am I, how do I present? If someone just comes to see me, you know, what are they seeing? And what am I putting myself out there? Or am I, so I really had to curate my presence. And there are some good LinkedIn learning opportunities that are out there that I took advantage of. Again, I started to be a lot more intentional about it. I started putting out some pieces like, here, I just went through this. Maybe this will be relatable to you. I remember doing a presentation on people that were graduating college, maybe going into their first job, and here's some things from my first job that you can use. Just to, again, put myself out there so that it really, I thought of it as like my first interview before I even showed up to an interview, because I know that recruiters will look, or prospective hiring managers will look at you on LinkedIn. So I was like, okay, well, I want them to see me before they really see me, or before I show up. So that was kind of the first thing that I did. And then I was working on my resume, which I did for a very little amount of time, because my way of thinking about it was everyone has their opinion on a resume. You know, you just got to go with what works for me, or for anyone else that's listening, I think. So I did that, and then I was applying to opportunities. I was getting some good traction with SES opportunities. I was even the finalist at one agency, but I realized that the hardest part for me, and I think where I was getting tripped up, was the interview. And I can remember one particular interview in advance where they said, there's gonna be five questions. And so I was like, okay, they're gonna ask a question about each of the core competencies. And then I had scripted out what I wanted to say. And that was really not like me at all. And then when I got in the interview, they asked me five totally different questions, and I kind of panicked. And I started trying to craft the answers back to what I had scripted. And yeah, at the end of it, I was like, okay, you're not gonna hear from them, but what are you going to do to improve this? And so that led me to working with you and really entirely redoing how I was interviewing, how I was telling my story, and getting a lot more comfortable in that process. And that was really the turning point, I think, in my career transition, was now I was in a much better footing to relate what I was doing, and particularly as I started to interview in the private sector, relate my government work to the commercial lens, and how I did know how to adapt, and you know, I wasn't going to be stuck in the government world. I could be relate to things that they were doing, and the experience that I had was applicable to the private sector as well. So luckily, I had that realization, and I had those couple of bad experiences that just to get them under my belt, and then and move on.
Yeah, I think there's interesting, you know, for when you and I started working together, one of the things that I find to be the most, I would say it's a critical ingredient to the whole thing working. And you mentioned this before we hopped on here and we're recording, but you know, you being self-aware and not afraid to really unpack what's going on. And I think when you're it's hard and you have to be, you know, vulnerable, and you have to kind of be, you know, I think in our working self, we're always trying to put the best foot package forward and we're confident and we can get the job done. And we're, you know, we're outwardly, we're going to get it done. And maybe behind the scenes, we're asking a friend or right. But there's something about this way of presenting. And I think when it gets to interviewing, you know, you're kind of open and vulnerable. You don't know what's going to happen. You really don't know what's going to be asked, you know, and so there's all this pressure. And then to your point around kind of scripting or wanting to be prepared and feel prepared and then being caught off guard, and then where do you find like your footing there? And I think the self-awareness and the opportunity of like you knew what you wanted. That's another great secret ingredient for as a coach and working with someone. Like sometimes I help people navigate that. Like, I don't know at all what I want. And that's a different type of exercise. But for us, it was like, I know what I want. And here's where I think's tripping me up, and here, but I don't know, right? So like, let's work together to figure that out. What would you say if you, because now it's been a minute, but what would you say when you think about like what was tripping you up, or what were some of those challenges in terms of being able to interview better or to feel more secure in that process? do you remember what some of those things were for you that kind of you said sort of pivoted or changed for you?
Yeah, I think I was initially trying to cram like a laundry list of things, right? Like I've done all of this stuff. I need to communicate it. And that was really, what in a short amount of time too. So it probably was just coming across as like incoherent, and this guy really doesn't know how to prioritize what he's done. So I abolished that, and what we worked on, and I think really made sense, was like a light bulb, was like lead with your strengths. Lead with the things that you do really well. Communicate your story that way. Know what those strengths are. Again, demonstrating that self-awareness. Articulate how, not just like what the strengths are, but how they've worked. What impact have they made? What results, I think, is another way of looking at it. Have you achieved leaning on those? And lean on those strengths also with the role that you're going into. Show you've done your homework with. What are some top challenges that maybe that organization is going through, and what would potentially you bring to that difficulty that they're facing, relying on what you do well and what you've done in the past? So that just made, again, like it was like light bulb, made so much sense. It was so much of a better way to present myself, and it worked really well when I was going through my interviews to start at McDonald's.
Okay, and that another piece to that, one of the things with strengths and starting in that space, if you will, what it does for people and what I love about it's like again this sort of magic ingredient, which is when you talk from a place of strengths, you inherently are more confident. It just comes through, right? So you're not trying to package an answer necessarily because it is like where you come from and what you're good at and what you feel good about and what you naturally. So when you can connect that to work, to outcomes, to value, right? Then I think that's where kind of that special sauce of like you're not acting a role of an interviewee. You're
Yeah.
actually, this is who I am and this is kind of what I can bring to the table. So yeah, let's talk about then the networking aspect, because I think that's an important piece. And I think you were
Yeah.
very, that's how we got connected through network too. So tell me, and you had even mentioned like early on, you said you were like, even if you were like taking papers around the building, you were one to maybe introduce yourself or so maybe this is something it could be one of your strengths or like you inherently kind of have a sense of it. But talk a little bit about that and how it worked for you in this transition.
Yeah, I think just recognizing I was very fortunate that the work that I had done with the private sector, I got to meet a lot of people. And, I was very aware that I had some people that I could call if I really needed something, and some people beyond that that would help me that I had formed real relationships with. And I'll come back and talk about how that was important. But I think I was, I didn't like collect business cards, right? That a lot of people do that. They'll say, "Oh, can I have your card? Can I have your card?" And I would follow up with people. I would really understand like who they were. It's important to me, I think, to be genuine and express interest in people and like, "Oh, how are your kids doing?" Or if I could peek, if I remember something, I would follow up and ask about that and really want to connect with them on an individual level. So I was not transactional in how I networked, and nor am I today. I still really try to be genuine with that. And if I don't think someone, I can add something to what they need or that they're going to necessarily help me, I won't focus on it as much, but I stay connected to as many people as I can with my time. So I think that was really helpful because if I found myself in a difficult situation, I was like, well, who knows about this? Who can I ask? Who would help me with this? Maybe that I've helped in the past or someone that I think would know. And so when I was ultimately starting to discuss like compensation for my private sector job, that was a huge just I think a source of worry because in the federal context, right, your salary is your salary. It's literally on a matrix. You can find where you are and that's it. There's nothing else. But there's short-term incentives and long-term incentives and things like that in the private sector that I just didn't have any familiarity with. So, well, let's go back to who I trust, who can help me with this, who can explain it in a way. And at least then I could say, oh, okay, now I'm starting to understand it. Thanks. Let me kind of reevaluate based on like what I've learned from this. So networking helped in that. I also remember one of the last interviews I had was with our executive vice president, and I remember thinking, gee, what's this person going to want to know? And so I asked someone who had been at that level, hey, when you're interviewing someone two positions below you, what do you talk about? And so that was really helpful. And networking, I'd say, is great for that. Definitely want people that are close to what you do, but get some people that are outside of what you do as well in your kind of stable of contacts, so that you can expand out, because you never know when you're going to need that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there's something about your what you're talking about in terms of you're putting yourself out there and you are putting some trust in people. And I think we're in a very sensitive time where people maybe are a bit hesitant to do that, or they're kind of this watch my back mentality with cancel culture, or what if I have this conversation and I don't really trust them and they might divulge something, maybe I'm not entirely ready to leave, like you were still in line for an SES, but the interviewing world or pivoting can be, who do you trust and where do you I think have those conversations. And I do think it, like you being again, like reaching out and being a little bit vulnerable and asking questions, like I do believe that is a kind of key that can unlock. And I oftentimes I think people sit back now with ChatGPT, you don't have to talk to anybody, right? You just like people are just looking up, how do I do this? How do I do this? And I just think the power in human connection, the power of you putting yourself out there saying, I don't know something, and then taking that information and you, because you're a seasoned professional, you can dissect like what is real there, what does that mean to me? Some people, it might not always jive exactly right, but you're going to be like, no, that's something good that I didn't know, and you kind of cipher or decipher what is important.
And I think you can always try to get a different perspective, right? I remember talking to a couple people about some things, and it just so happened that someone that had been one of my colleagues was kind of going through the same transition at the same time. And so we would, I don't want to say compare notes, but we would talk about, like, hey, this is what my process was like. What was yours like? And it was like, oh, I didn't have anything like that. And so it was interesting to kind of see how someone else was going through it. And so I've always tried to be very open with people who reached out to me about maybe having to take a different opportunity at this time, unfortunately, or wanting to take a different opportunity at this time. And I've been very open with them, particularly about, like, hey, my process took this many months, so be ready for that, and kind of know that you've got that time, or that you can put in that amount of time. So yeah, getting a couple perspectives.
And that was actually my next question. Perfect segue. So how long from when you first decided, yep, I'm ready to consider the path outside to actually landing the role and starting? Let's talk about like that whole, like, was it, how long was that? Want to grow your career the smart way and avoid the mistakes I learned the hard way? My book, Soft Skills I Learned the Hard Way, is packed with real talk, ready-to-use tips, and funny, relatable stories that make it easy to read for busy professionals. Whether you're just starting out or leading a team, this book's got something for you. Grab a copy at tfasoftskills.com. Now back to the show.
So the longest context from when I really started wanting to get serious about the SES, I would say it was probably 2 years to when I actually made the change. When I started my, like, temporary assignment to focus on the work, and I started working on myself, that was 18 months total. So it took like 6 months for that opportunity to kind of come together. I probably spent 4 months really working on getting that just on the SES. So now we're down to, like, what, 14 months of time that I worked on every opportunity, private sector and SES. And then when it really came down to being tactical about applying for different roles, and the one that I ultimately got, even that was probably about 5 or 6 months altogether. So it's a long, it can be a long process. And I think that was a surprise to me. And it probably would be a surprise to some other people. You think that you just put your resume out there, or apply to a job, and it's going to happen. It might, but my experience was definitely, it takes longer time.
And it's important to note, I think, that for McDonald's, like, you had someone that was interested in it and in you for a particular opportunity. Even with that, I think there's also a misnomer too of like, oh, well, then it's in the bag. And it's like, no.
No.
You can have a friend in an organization, right? And then you still have to go through hoops. You still have to your point of like interviewing with that executive level member of the team, and you know, there's all these gates that you're going through to kind of ultimately get there. So when we talk about that interview process and you kind of moving through that, what helped you the most? What do you think? And were there periods of time where you still weren't sure? It seems like it, right? Like you weren't getting, even once you started interviewing there, it wasn't like within 2 weeks, you're like, here's the offer. So it's like, you know, that resilience and that persistence, I think, shows up again.
Yeah. I remember two things. One was I really did homework. So I would go and check out the McDonald's site. I would read the annual report that they're submitting for shareholders. I would look as deep as I could into as much as I could about the specific role, and it was going to be working with a particular segment. And so it's like, okay, do your homework on that segment. So that when I showed up in the interview, I was, crafting my answers so that they covered that a little bit. Again, I wasn't scripting anything, but I was ready with some facts and some ideas for that. I at least could articulate. I knew what, countries were involved and things like that. So th the homework was key. And I think, something about me, and this is one of my strengths that I knew, but when I did the strengths assessment, it confirmed it, is I'm a competitive person. So I remember there's one particular interview where someone expressed their concern about me as a candidate. And I remember just kind of like getting up a little bit and like, well, let me address that concern. And I was not gonna it was a very done in a very civil way, but I remember just countering it and being ready to say, well, let me tell you about how you might think that. I can definitely see it, but here's this, and this. And I was just that kicked in, and I felt like it probably helped with that interviewer to be able to allay their concerns.
Well, you know, the preparedness piece, like the you can't knock it, right? I think that's what I think allows us to, when you're in the moment, they talk about this with athletes all the time, the reps, and that's what you and I talked about this a fair amount
Yeah.
too. Just the reps, so that when you're in the situation, it's already in there. You've got like kind of that muscle memory. You've practiced some things out loud, right? That feels more authentic to you. You've got maybe four or five stories or achievements or results that you know translate to most roles that you're interviewing for. And then it's how do you frame it towards that organization? And I really like your point around that specificity. And I mean, I've said it on this podcast a bunch. I've said it to anybody that'll listen to me, but it is really, as an interviewer, I want to know what value you're going to bring me. And I also want to know how that value connects to my overall org, whether it's like my group or the totality of the business. And so you as the candidate, when you can connect a dot there for me as an interviewer, I'm like, oh, I can see him in that role because you're doing my work for me. And
Yeah.
it sounds, it's nuanced and it's not like easily just like to figure it out. But I think you can, if you do your research and you look at job descriptions and you look at what's required and you start to think about your strengths and you're like, oh, you know, I'm someone that, you know, provides quality deliverables regardless of the pressure I'm under. You know, however that, if it's, you know, timely work quality deliverable, right? Being able to tell a story around that, all those things. So I think that preparedness is not, shouldn't be underscored. Like it's such an important part. When you were negotiating, because this, to your point around compensation, this comes up a lot with people that I work with in the federal to commercial space. This is one of the things that
Yeah.
people always want to talk to me about. It's
Yeah.
like, how do I negotiate this? What is reasonable? I think there are a couple of unicorns out there, to your point, that like switched, have these massive salaries. So everyone thinks, oh, I'm just going to switch in like time and a half, you know, like double or, you know, 1.5 times what I'm making in the government because of the cap. And so for you, maybe just you don't have to give too many specifics, but like, you know, what was that process like for you? How far off or close to, and again, was that research that you kind of knew where you were going to be?
Yeah, it was, it's funny you said the unicorns because one of the people that I talked to expressed it that very same way that, if your expectation is that you're going to blow away your government salary, then if you get an offer like that, jump at it. It's a unicorn. You're not going to see another one. You'll probably get something that like matches what your salary is. So I think, for me in discussing with them, first of all, my recruiter was absolutely fantastic. He made a point of saying at the outset of our time working together that, he was my advocate. And I really believe that. So when I would discuss with him about salary, I really got the sense that he was going back and advocating for me in that regard. And he wasn't just, kind of looking to exclude me or weed me out or like look for some inside baseball that was going to help the other side on negotiation. So I don't know if that's how they work across the board, but mine was great. And I think McDonald's does a great job being very open and transparent about the salary and all compensation. So, I approached it with the homework. I always knew, even when I was like starting this process, kind of where my total compensation number was going to be. So I think that that was a big one. And then it was really just like, okay, how do you put the different Legos together to make it match that, or match or exceed or whatever it is that it ends up being. So it had to be a little bit, flexible, I think, in that, in terms of, yeah, you're used to just getting this thing called salary, and that is what it is. But now you're going to get something called, base composition or base compensation, and there's these other portions. And so really, it was just understanding that, first of all, and how it worked, and literally down to, things like equity and how that's different. It was a very unique thing for me to do the first time. But just really understanding as much as I could and thinking about it. But I had to start with that expectation and that kind of overall number, which is something that everyone has to do for themselves. But then it was really just, talking to them about that, and they're going to be able to get there or they're not, and just kind of recognizing that that's how it's going to go. And in my case, I was very happy with it.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. Like one of the things we talk about early was like thresholds, right? Like what is your threshold for a bunch of things, right? Is it travel? Is it, the people that you're working with, like what that community is like, the work itself? Sometimes you can find if this is the most fulfilling work ever, then maybe that's going to trump your threshold for comp. So I think, in part of your self-exploration of figuring out what are those thresholds. I just talked to someone yesterday who we were talking about someone that has an opportunity, same thing of like the fulfilling work versus what if the comp isn't quite right versus like what are your trade-offs and really like sitting down and making that list of like what ultimately are you trying to do for yourself? Is it security? Is it, financial security? Is it, oh, I'm looking for a growth opportunity in an area that I don't know as well? The list goes on. I think knowing that helps you in the process. And then the other thing that I think is so interesting that, we'll get to obviously, but we get so focused on the immediate. You don't really think about, oh, things could change. People can leave positions. There's other opportunities to your very early point about like just get in the door. Even for us that are more seasoned and you're pivoting and it's a second act, I think sometimes the same rule applies. Like you just have no idea how things might change or shift and what opportunities might present themselves that open doors for either different types of experience or comp. So I think that's something to keep in mind too for people. Like you can get very narrow in your view as you go through the process.
Yeah, I think that, I didn't really hadn't always been focused on it, but there's like tangibles and intangibles, right? It's like you're saying that the team dynamic and compensation being a tangible, but then there's other things like the culture of the organization, the what are they looking to do, where are they going, things like that that you can be a part of. In my case, I live in the Washington, D.C. area. McDonald's is headquartered in Chicago, so I really wanted to be a part, but I wanted to stay here. So talking to them about a remote position was important, and that was a huge piece of it. It kind of builds together into the overall, not just compensation, but every bit of the job satisfaction that you get out of it, and where you are in the organization. So that was a big piece for me too.
All right, let's talk about two things. One, the process of saying goodbye to your federal family, and obviously you had a lot of relationships there, and saying, making that exit, and how was that? So let me just start with that question, and then we'll move into, I want to talk about how, compare and contrast once you got there, what it was like. But was it hard to really make that decision to exit, even though it was like a great offer and it was like you'd kind of, this was the path you wanted to take, but how hard was it to say goodbye?
It was very hard to say goodbye to the people. I had worked with some people for 20 years. And I can think back. I knew some people, before they had children to children going away for college, and some people that, had became grandparents and all these kind of things. So saying goodbye to the people was definitely hard. Leaving the work, I really felt like I was in a place to leave it. I felt really strongly about the things that I had accomplished. I, kind of did my best to position the work that I was leaving behind to be successful moving into the future, but I was leaving in a good place. I really was not looking back with any regrets about that. I left confident, but yeah, I missed the people. I've stayed in touch. Particularly, this has been a challenging year for them, so I've stayed in touch with them. Talked to many people who want to know, like we're talking about today. How did I make this transition? What recommendations would I have for them? Even people that I didn't work with have reached out, and so I've always been an open door to them. So yeah, it was difficult. I remember kind of handing in my badge and just going like, "Ooh, this is a weird feeling," and walking out the door without an
Yeah.
expectation to come back. It was a little funny.
Okay. And then, you get to McDonald's, you're starting in the role, probably all the like, it's the honeymoon period, you're kind of something brand new, totally different culture and environment. What would you say with respect to your transition into that culture? Was there any major like, oh no, what did I do? Or this is so different than what I expected? Did it meet your expectations? Did it fall short? Like, maybe let's talk within maybe the first 6 months or so.
Enjoying this episode? Check out tfasoftskills.com or your favorite streaming platform to hear from over 150 guests that have joined me on Relatable. And be sure to check out our Relatable with the Expert series. In our interviews at Relatable, you'll hear authentic stories, expert perspectives, and practical advice on mastering the soft skills that position you for success.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. On day two, I was like riding the high from the welcome day, and McDonald's is a huge brand, right? And one of the
Yeah.
things that our mission is to create feel good moments for everyone and make them accessible to everyone, and we do a good job at that. So you can imagine my welcome day was just a lot of fun. And then kind of when I sat down on day two and really started getting into opening up my laptop and getting work done. I was there in the headquarters, and it was just such a great environment that I had this kind of sinking feeling that I was like, "Oh, you should have done this years ago." And it was really surprising. I didn't anticipate that, and I had to kind of, I would say, grieve my career a little bit and say like, "Well, you did that for 23 years. You did great work." It's, yes, now that you're over here, it would have been great to start maybe 5 or 6 years before, but it is what it is at this point. Make the most of your time going forward, and enjoy this time going forward. So that was really what I started doing, from that point on. 6 months, things happened. I started in May. In December, they had the assassination of Brian Thompson from UnitedHealth Group. That was a huge event, another thing that really impacts the security community in ways that you n don't necessarily see coming, but we're still, I think, the security industry is dealing with that. Obviously, what we were doing changed, as did a lot of other people, I think. So yeah, just you find that you always have to pivot. And I think, even although I was working on AI early on, now it's a lot more into what everyone is doing. Probably a lot of organizations have it built into their applications. And so, yeah, it just ways of working change. And that probably would have been the case if I was at the State Department. So there's always that constant of things changing. But my time with McDonald's has been great. I'm still enjoying it as much as I did at the start, even though a lot of things have shifted and changed in the interim.
You know, I love, I mean, the idea of like, oh, I could have done this sooner. I think there's two things. One, the life philosopher in me says like all roads lead to the next thing. So kind of without those 23 years of experience, you might not get this opportunity, right? So it's easy to like second guess. And then at the same time, it's a good reminder if you are feeling a nudge. And you're, it's like, listen to the whispers is what I say. And I remember after being somewhere for 10 years, I was approached to leave and, actually I had been there 13 years, but, someone that I talked to was like, 10 years is like about, if you're in the same org with kind of the same people and you're sort of in the same sphere, let's say, it's like, it's hard to keep growing, learning like that 10-year period, right? Even if your roles changed a little bit or things come in, their environment changes, like there's something about that that becomes like Groundhog Day-ish, right? Or you're, so it's pretty natural, I think, to like want some change or shift. So I think, it can be fearful and, sometimes it's like, no, I'm just going to go with what's comfortable. I'm going to just stay. So I think listening to that though, and being, open to the whispers is like a nod to that in terms of those thoughts. Okay. So now one other question, and then I have a couple of like rapid fire sort of questions that I always ask people, but one is around culturally and team dynamic, because I think I'm really curious about that given like, and I know this isn't true, it's a stereotype, right? But you think of like the federal government and that entity, it's like there's a certain type of culture there, especially for someone you've been there for that long. You know what works, what doesn't work. You know how to maneuver, right? How to like, there's politics within every org. So to have that backdrop and then go into a very commercial, I mean, you really jumped from like, extremes, I think. How did you navigate that? Like, did I'm curious, yeah, how you navigated that change?
Well, I think it's something that I'm still navigating. So, there's change that happens, like we were talking about. There's industry things, like you put it really well, that there's going to be dynamics at play, right? And I'm in a different dynamic, and there are dynamics within that. So there's a lot of swirl going on. But guess where there was a lot of swirl also going on? In the government. So it's just realizing that, oh yeah, you've dealt with this before. You know what to do when you get a new set of priorities. You know what to do when your resources change. So it was kind of like that realization that you've done this before, and that I think comes from, my just the number of years that I've been doing this and having had many different transitions within a stable environment, but it's still different transitions, and having that experience to lean on in times of change. But culturally, I'm glad you asked that because yeah, there's a stereotype of, I think, government work. But one area that I've really keyed in on, and I think again, I'm still trying to do my best to adjust to, is in the environment that I came in the government was security focused. And so when we were asked to do something, there were not being dramatic, there were life and death consequences, right? Like it was, we always prioritized things that were on the protection of life. And so what that kind of meant was that you took on a lot of things, because if that's what the mission involved, as security, we needed to figure out a way to do it. In the corporate world, there's a lot more focus on prioritization. What's going to affect, our bottom line? What's going to affect sales? Things like that. And all of us are really empowered to say no to requests if it doesn't align to our priorities and our goals and what we're working on. So that was a real that has taken some adjustment, because sometimes you hear no, and sometimes you need to say no. And realizing that that's okay, that's a cultural thing, because it's really saying yes to what's important, has been an adjustment. And luckily for me, McDonald's is great about instilling their culture in all of us and helping us get there with resources. We talk about it with leadership and as leadership teams to really put it into effect, like what's it going to mean for us. And so that's one area that I really hadn't thought I would have to adjust to as much as I am.
It's funny, you reminded me of a story. So when I left, before I left Deloitte at the end of my, I was in like basically any crisis matter came to my team, and we work with Office of Security and our legal team all the time, and people were our product, so it was always about people's safety. And so we had very, life and death situations, people being choppered that had medical problems and, whole thing. And I remember interviewing with Amazon, and they asked me a behavioral question, like, tell me about a time when you had to, and I did this whole story around this, like, it was life and death, and how did I, how we had certain laws that we had to consider globally and all the things. And the interviewer was like, I like lost them completely, right? Because it was like not at all relevant to the job I was going into. It wasn't, it just was not. And you could just see them like, one, that sounds like an insane job. And by the way, could you give me something that's just a little bit more like bring it down a notch? So I think like the adaptive, right, of like figuring out like, yeah, what is this culture? What's important in this culture? What means something? And then being able to meet people where they are is like is super important. That was a lesson learned for me in that interview practice. Okay, let's talk about my favorite topic, soft skills, because I think both in the federal government and where you are now, different skills, I think, surface at different times in terms of when they're important. So when I ask this question, you can have people sometimes are like, well, what do you mean by soft skills? So it's like obviously, communication, influence, collaboration. I consider them the skills that sort of augment and support our technical acumen. So for you, do you have a favorite? Do you have one that's helped you the most? Do you feel like, there's one that you're seeing that you've benefited from, but we're like seeing a gap? I'm just curious, like, if you were to kind of your commentary on that skill set right now, I'd love to hear some thoughts.
So I thought about this, and really two things. So I was an English major in undergrad, so writer, okay? And at the State Department, we could accomplish a lot with a really well-crafted email. Like you could literally lay out an almost an agenda and ask very pointed things, and you could receive exactly what you wanted back, and that's how you transacted business. Does not work at McDonald's. If I'm sending an email, it's to set up a conversation. It's to really have that like face-to-face and more collegial conversation around things, develop a relationship. I had to make a huge adjustment to that. So like when I was sending these emails and not getting responses back or not getting the response back I had intended, I was like, okay, what did you do wrong? It was never, why isn't that person answering me? It was like, how did I miss? So I think, again, being self-reflective like that was really helpful. And now, I've gotten the hang of it, if you will. So I was working with someone just this week. I really want to know about the status of what they're doing. And I resisted the temptation to just ask it. And I was like, hey, can we get together and talk more about this? Yes. And so now you schedule something. So that was culturally something that I think that I had to get an adjustment to. But really, that communication is ultimately, to get back to what you're asking about, that's the most important thing. Being able to pivot to conversation. And then when you're in conversation, if you get that opportunity where you're talking to an executive, I think, again, having a liberal arts background, one of the things that I'm just kind of naturally good at is being able to say things concisely, clearly, and articulate the reason why I'm saying this, or like it comes through at the same time, like what's the impact I'm trying to make. And I've had a lot of people say like, oh, you said that very diplomatically. And I think they're kind of joking at where I came from, and it's like, no, that's just me. That's how I communicate, and it's very intentional when I do it, because I'm trying to really make a point.
I think the concise bit, especially with attention span now, you lose people so fast. So the idea of like being concise, being intentional, and having like specificity. I mean, it's not so rigid that like you can't, that the conversation can't flow, but I think, people like a structure. Especially when we're so busy, it's like, I know I have 30 minutes. Good outcome is this, this, and this. Like, it still leaves room for like, how are your kids? And hope you have a great day. And what's the weather like? But I think, like, without that, it's just a waste of time. And then people start associating with you, like, that you're not you aren't a waste of time, but you waste people's time. And so I love
Yeah.
that combination of like being intentional and concise, and given that language, and you know, that's kind of your jam anyway. You know, that is like a strength that you rely on. Okay.
Yeah.
And then one of my faves is just around like when you think about your younger self. So let's think about maybe 20 something, right? Maybe just on the precipice of graduating, or even, you know, some people like to go even further back. But I'm curious of like if you were to put your arm around young James,
Yeah.
you were to like write the benefit of age and experience, what counsel would you give him?
So I think if I can, I will say the high school James and then that early career James. And it's kind of the same, a little bit closely
Okay.
related.
I love it. Yeah.
I'm a big picture person. And what I mean by that is, like, if you tell me a couple aspects of something, I'm going to get like the overarching theme of where you're going. And I'm going to say, yep, I got it. I understand. So my advice to the high school and college age James is ask more questions. Just because you can grasp something, just assume you're probably missing a detail that's really important. And how that materialized, I went to a private school for high school, very small. We didn't have AP classes and things like that that would earn you college credit. I transferred to public high school my last year. And I remember the guidance counselor looking at my, transcript and saying like, "Oh, you just need like these three classes to graduate. So let's put you into film study and all these other ones that really didn't matter." I should have said, "Well, is there anything else I can take?" I didn't do that because I was like, "Oh, I just need three credits. Okay, got it. Let's knock those out." And I think that really was me for a long time. I didn't dive deeper. I didn't say like, well, what else can I do? Is there anything else? If I'm interested in this, how can I explore that opportunity? And then I think as I moved into my earlier career, it was the advice I would give is advocate for yourself more. As I mentioned, I worked for the chief of staff for the Immigration Naturalization Service, and we had like a career conversation one time, and he was saying like, hey, think about what you want to do because I can help you. And he meant it genuinely. And so I did, and I thought about it, and I said I wanted to do XYZ. And he's like, oh, no, you don't want to do that. You want to do this. And I was kind of like, okay, I'll hear you on that. I should have said, like, no, I want to do this. Here's why. This is why it aligns with what I want to do more and why I think it's a better fit for me, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't always do that. I kind of took the lens of, well, they know. Maybe this I should be open to that. As opposed to really just, if I was wrong, just at least articulating why I wanted to do that more and have more of a dialogue, more of a conversation. So those are some things that it took me a while to learn, both of those that I'd like to have gotten a head start on.
Yes, I feel like the deferring. We often defer, right? Even at that age. And I think knowing your voice, trusting your gut, that like you know you better than anyone else. So I love that. And it never hurts to ask one more question, like exactly that. Like just to get, it might end up at the same answer or it might be a different answer, but that impatience. So I love that. Well, this has been lovely. As I knew it would be, but I really feel like you gave good, like substantive examples, and hopefully for people that are in this path, you know, it's like stay the course, stay positive. The opportunities will come, but like you talked about it, almost a 2-year period of really from a self-exploration to then executing on that to. I would say like refining that with respect to what you were learning through LinkedIn and then you and I working together and then practicing that and executing on that and learning from mistakes. Like there's just a lot that you've, I think, experienced that hopefully people listening will get some hope and some optimism and just really appreciate your time.
Of course. Well, it's great chat as I knew it would be as well. And I really hope it does help someone because I think one of the things I would say is it can take some time. And if you really feel like you've got that one opportunity, then put everything into it. But also capitalize on that work that you're doing because it's probably applicable to something else as well if it doesn't work out. So kind of play the percentages and just maximize your return on your investment of your own time. But you were a big help in my journey. And so thank you very much for the opportunity to come back and talk about it.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Thank you, Relatable audience. We appreciate you listening. We continue to grow our audience and global footprint. Please rate, subscribe, leave comments, and share this podcast with others. You can also check out videos of Relatable episodes on our YouTube channel, TFA Soft Skills. Until next time, this is Career Coach T. Stay connected.